Welcome to the Deep Dive. Ever wonder why the algorithms that increasingly shape our lives often feel like locked boxes?
Yeah, completely opaque sometimes.
Exactly. Today, we're diving into a fascinating idea called commonistic affordance. It offers a way to not only understand these systems better, but also maybe, you know, open them up a bit.
And our guide for this is an essay titled Take Back the Algorithms, A Media Theory of Commonistic Affordance.
Right. It's from the Media Theory Journal, published back in 2019, part of a special issue that was rethinking this whole concept of affordance.
Yeah, and the author, Shintaro Miyazaki, based in Switzerland, makes a really powerful case about why we often feel so disconnected from all these computational processes running our world.
Totally. The essay's main point is that, look, many algorithms just operate without transparency. They're like hidden machinery behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And this lack of openness, it leads to what the essay calls the unaffordability of algorithms. Think about it. These powerful tools sorting our news, recommending stuff, influencing big decisions.
They're often deliberately kept out of reach. You can't easily poke around inside them.
But the essay proposes a really compelling alternative, commoning. It's about a collaborative, community-focused approach to achieve what they call commonistic affordance with algorithms.
So maybe we should clarify affordance first, especially in this digital context. It's not like a doorknob, right? Where you just see it and know how it works.
Good point. Algorithmic processes are often invisible, happening off screen. And crucially, they're frequently designed so you can't easily change them.
Exactly. The essay mentions Friedrich Kittler's idea of protected mode.
Oh yeah, like your phone's operating system maybe. You use the apps, but getting into the core code, that's usually blocked off.
Precisely. And that restricted access limits how much we understand and how much we can actually shape these digital environments we inhabit.
Which is why that call to action, take back the algorithms, really hits home, doesn't it?
It does. And it's not just like complaining. It's a call for collective action, finding ways to transform algorithms from these potentially restrictive things
into tools that are more equitable, more accessible through this idea of commoning.
Right. And when they say making affordable, it's important to stress it's not about money.
No, not the price tag. It's about making algorithms graspable, understandable.
Tangible in some way. Yeah. Usable beyond just how the designers intended.
Movable, adaptable, and ultimately shareable. Okay, so let's unpack this. Commoning in the digital world, what does that actually look like?
Well, at its heart, commoning is about communities. Self-organizing to share and manage resources, like a community garden, you know.
Where everyone chips in and benefits?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So in the digital world, the essay draws a really strong parallel to the free and open source software movement, FOSS.
Okay. The idea that software and data can be like a digital commons, a resource that's open for everyone to use, learn from, build on.
Exactly. Like Wikipedia or Linux or all sorts of open source projects, resources that aren't just locked down by one company chasing profits.
Which is, let's face it, how most digital stuff works now, right? Owned or controlled by big profit-driven entities.
It often is. And that's why the essay points to the importance of non-permissive licensing for these digital commons.
What does that mean, non-permissive?
It means the license has rules that prevent corporations from just taking the open source code, tweaking it, and selling it as their own closed product without giving anything back.
Got it. So it ensures some reciprocity, keeps the commons healthy, rather than just letting companies extract value.
Precisely. It's trying to safeguard that shared space.
The essay also mentions drawing inspiration from movements like Take Back the Economy or Take Back the Night. There's a common thread there, isn't there?
Absolutely. It's all about empowerment, about people reclaiming control over systems that profoundly affect their lives.
So taking back algorithms here means shifting programming away from just profit.
And more towards making these tools understandable, usable, accessible to more people.
Okay, let's dig deeper now into making algorithms affordable.
Yeah.
The essay really stresses they aren't just abstract math formulas.
No, not at all. One key point is that they're often non-reversible. You know, unlike a simple math equation, you can work backwards.
Right.
The steps an algorithm takes, the decisions it makes, they have real consequences in the world that you can't just easily undo. They operate in time. They shape things.
Like a credit score algorithm, for instance. That decision has a real lasting impact.
Exactly. They're actively filtering our reality, nudging our choices, opening or closing doors.
So the key to making them affordable is this idea of liberation from protectedness,
yeah.
getting them out of that black box.
That's the core of it. Making affordable means turning these opaque processes into something we can, you know, get our heads around conceptually.
Interact with somehow.
Yes, maybe tinker with, adapt for our own needs, and then share that knowledge or those adaptations with others.
It even touches on mediation, right? How algorithms act as these powerful filters.
Definitely. And it brings up some cool examples like circuit bending for hardware or code bending for software.
Oh, yeah, where people mess with electronics or code to see what happens, find hidden sounds or glitches.
Exactly. It's about exploring those concealed layers, often without needing like a formal engineering degree, getting hands-on.
You know, this pushes back against something interesting. The essay critiques that whole "don't make me think" philosophy and design.
Oh, that's a really important point. Yeah, the idea that usability means hiding all the complexity.
The essay argues, look, ease of use is fine to start, but real understanding, true affordability, comes from being able to actually engage with that complexity, to kind of unmake things.
To see how the parts fit together, how they work, and maybe even discover completely unexpected things they can do.
So it's not just simplifying, it's making things understandable enough so we can then explore their richness, glitches, alternative uses, users the designers never even imagined.
And I love this idea that real mastery of a system includes understanding its malfunctions, not just its intended functions.
Yeah, it's about empowering users, making them active explorers, not just passive consumers, accepting the system as is.
Liberating the system and the user from some predetermined definition of mastery.
This all ties into opposing what the essay calls enclosure 3.0,
mm-hmm.
this sort of neoliberal impulse to enclose everything, turn everything into a commodity for profit.
Including the very code that structures our digital interactions.
So making affordable is also this act of resistance, isn't it? Unmaking that purely capitalistic value and reclaiming these tools for, well, the commons.
Exactly. And to make this less abstract, the essay uses a really great example. Machine vision, specifically the Viola Jones algorithm.
Ah, right. And it connects this to Adam Harvey's CV Dazzle project.
Yeah, which is fascinating. People using avant-garde makeup and hairstyles to basically confuse facial recognition systems.
It's a way of making these invisible surveillance technologies tangible, right? By actively poking at their limits and showing how they can be disrupted.
Precisely. And what's key here is that the Viola Jones algorithm itself, which dates back to 2001 for detecting faces.
It's actually available in the open source OpenCV library.
Meaning artists like Harvey, activists, researchers, anyone really, can get their hands on it and experiment.
So how does it work, roughly? The essay gives a bit of detail.
Basically, it uses these simple visual patterns called hair features. Think like dark light contrasts. It scans an image with these features.
Okay.
And then it uses something called a cascaded decision tree, like a series of fast checks to decide if a face is there. It learns this through supervised machine learning.
Meaning it's trained on thousands and thousands of images already labeled face or not face.
Right. But here's the critical part, connecting back to affordability and bias, because those hair features rely heavily on light-dark contrast.
Ah, I see where this is going. Skin tone could be a huge factor.
Exactly. Historically, this algorithm, and others like it, had real problems accurately detecting darker-skinned faces. This often stemmed from biases in the original training data.
And maybe the feature type itself just wasn't as effective across different skin tones. Programmed racism, essentially, even if unintentional.
It raises those really difficult questions, and that makes projects like CV Dazzle so powerful. They're not just technical hacks. They playfully expose these limitations.
They make the algorithm aesthetically affordable, as the essay puts it. You see its flaws, its biases, through this artistic intervention.
And this naturally leads into the wider issue of algorithmic bias. The essay mentions, for instance, the IEEE P7003 working group.
That's engineers trying to create standards, right? To get developers thinking about bias from the start.
Yes, which is definitely important work, trying to build considerations for fairness into the design process.
But the essay also asks, is that enough? Do we also need these more community-based commenting approaches alongside the technical standards?
That's the crucial question it poses. And it brings us right back to commonistic affordance.
Okay, so what defines this kind of affordance?
Well, the essay stresses it operates in the name of commonism. It's rarely something you see in typical product design, which is usually geared towards profit, what Lefebvre called the rhythm of capital.
Right. The goal is different.
And the essay suggests a shift in thinking. Instead of the old industrial model capitalists owning factory machines, we now have what Mackenzie Warrick calls vectoralists.
Vectoralists.
People or entities who control the vectors of information, the channels, the platforms, and crucially, the algorithms and their embedded biases.
Okay, so designing for commonistic affordances is about pushing back against that control.
It's about reclaiming accessibility, yes, and also about playing with the poetic, the social, the technical, even the utopian possibilities within these complex body-mind media systems we're all part of.
This sounds like it requires looking deeper than just the surface level.
Definitely. The essay invokes Timothy Morton's concept of a context explosion. Making algorithms affordable isn't just about the user interface. It means looking at the inner workings, maybe even down to the level of microinstructions on the CPU or GPU.
Wow. Okay. So all these different levels of affordance are tangled together.
They're recursively intertwined, yeah. And the goal is that algorithms shouldn't be these, like, remote, mysterious things we desire but can't touch. They should be part of our everyday toolkit.
Which is where open source and good documentation become so vital. Like with Viola Jones being an open CV.
Exactly. That availability is a crucial first step.
But the essay points out a potential snag even there, right?
Yeah.
With the open CV license.
Yeah, it uses a permissive license, which is good in some ways, but it doesn't stop companies from using the code in commercial, closed source products without necessarily contributing back.
So it doesn't fully guarantee that ongoing commenting aspect.
Right. True commonistic affordance, the essay argues, goes beyond just reusing modules. It requires really knowing, recognizing, playing with the inner workings, the timing. It needs a more, maybe, sensorial connection.
How do you get a sensorial connection with code?
Well, maybe through using media technologies to understand other media technologies, visualizations, sonifications, ways to make the processes more perceptible. The goal is increasing connectivity and what the essay calls environmentality.
Environmentality. Okay, what does that mean here? It makes me think of, like, ecology.
It's related. The essay again draws on Timothy Morton. Environmentality is that awareness you have of something functioning normally in the background.
An awareness that suddenly gets really sharp when it breaks down, like when the power goes out, or on a bigger scale, climate change makes us aware of the biosphere.
Exactly that. And the essay argues we need to bring that environmental awareness to digital affordances, something often forgotten when the focus is just on smooth, invisible design.
So algorithms aren't just tools. They're like new kinds of environments, interacting with all our other environments.
That's the idea. They intermingle with our social, physical, biological environments. And making them affordable, making them graspable, increases our environmentality. It connects the user, the experimenter, with the algorithm in these feedback loops.
So you start asking different questions. What is this relationship between me and the algorithm? What does it seem to be? Where are the edges?
And crucially, does the data I feed it, or the data it's already seen, change its behavior? Like with Viola Jones and bias, is that a feature, a bug, intentional, accidental?
It's that context explosion again. What's actually doing the processing?
Yeah.
The chip, the network, my interpretation.
Right. And taking back algorithms in this deeper sense isn't just finding flaws. It's opening up potential for new affordances, maybe even useful malfunctions, fostering solidarity and commenting over just competition.
The goal being more self-determined ways of living and sharing knowledge and resources.
And the essay goes quite far here, proposing solidarity with algorithms.
Solidarity with algorithms. How does that work?
Seeing them not just as inert tools, but perhaps as companions, maybe even co-species in our techno-ecological world. It draws on the root of solidarity. Solidus, meaning solid, whole.
But not solid in the sense of closed off, right?
No, exactly the opposite. This solidarity isn't about building walls, but about making bodies human, machinic, ecological, more porous, more connected with a sense of mutual responsibility.
So it's about increasing this intergrowing, this interconnectedness, more environmentality.
Yeah. Becoming aware of our own porosity, affective, psychotechnological, perceptive, and maybe even becoming more porous, more open.
This sounds like a call for radical openness, but maybe different from the kind Silicon Valley sometimes talks about.
Very different. This openness explicitly includes malfunctions, glitches, the unexpected. It's oriented towards learning about commenting itself within these complex ecosystems.
It's about a technologically augmented engagement with all kinds of energy fluctuations connected to our bodies, our thinking,
and playfully exploring alternative ways things could be coupled together, even if they seem dysfunctional by standard metrics.
But there's a catch, isn't there? A need to be vigilant.
Absolutely. Crucially, the essay warns about countermovements that try to reenclose what's been opened up, to privatize the commons again.
And there's the challenge of speed, too. Florian Sprenger's point that algorithms make decisions so fast in such huge numbers
that it feels almost impossible for any individual to track them, let alone intervene.
So how do we make sure it's never too late to reconnect with these systems that are getting faster and more complex all the time?
That's why making these perceptually unreachable algorithms affordable in the sense we've been discussing is so critical. It's not about understanding every single decision,
but about understanding the processes, the biases, the potential, the environment they create.
And understanding commonistic affordances isn't a one-off task. It requires play, cooperation, continuous engagement.
And responsibility comes with making something affordable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including being attentive to those attempts at neoliberal reenclosure.
Yeah. Competition and growth aren't inherently bad in this view, but they're only tolerated if they ultimately serve mutual solidarity and sharing. There's always room for productive disagreement, what Chantal Mouffe calls agonistics, within commoning.
So this whole discussion of commonistic affordance, it's not like, here's the final answer, here's the perfect system.
Not at all. The essay sees it as an ongoing process, unfolding along recursive paths. Affordances afford further affordances. It's like a concrete utopia, always in the making, always unfolding.
Commonistic affordances of algorithms are maybe like a hopeful signal in, pointing towards a future that's still connected to the messy realities of the present.
That seems to be the core message, yeah.
Okay, so just to quickly recap, we've dug into this really vital idea of needing to understand and actively engage with the algorithms shaping our lives, moving towards commonistic affordance through openness, sharing, collective action.
And we saw how systems like the Viola Jones algorithm highlight both the potential and the pitfalls, especially around bias and accessibility.
Absolutely. So maybe final thought for you listening. Think about the algorithms you interact with every day. Your phone apps, social media feeds, online recommendations.
In what ways do they feel inaccessible or unaffordable in the sense we've discussed? Not about money, but about understanding and agency.
And what small steps, maybe within your own life or community, could be explored to make them a bit more transparent, a bit more open?
Could this idea of algorithmic solidarity, thinking about our relationship with these systems differently, actually be a useful way forward, something to think about?